Good morning, everyone. Sunday, March 29th, 2015. Our subject is reality. Yesterday, we had our Bible study on the pure in heart, and we got to all the questions but the last one, so which is a very important one to me, and I'm sure to all of you. So, Linda, would you read the question? Do you happen to have the question? Otherwise,
yeah, I do have it here.
Thank you.
We're looking at 2 Peter 1, 2 through 8. We're defining the qualities that he lists and why each one is important and how they pertain to our lives. The first one was faith.
Okay. Some of you might not be prepared in this way, but some of you are, and or you can just speak spontaneously about what faith means to you. I would like to mention, well, some time ago, this passage meant so much to me. I remember that Mrs. Evans gave a sermon on it, and she went through each one of these words. I actually tried to find the sermon in her article, but I couldn't. But what meant so much to me was the last verse of it, where it says, "For if these things be in you and abound, they make you that ye shall neither be barren nor unfruitful in the knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ." So if you ever feel barren or unfruitful, go back to this passage. Go back to your notes from this passage. Ask yourself, are these things in you and are they abounding in you? Because if they are, you cannot be barren or unfruitful. This is a biblical promise. And this is why this passage meant so much to me, because especially at that time in my life, I was feeling terribly barren and unfruitful. So I went back to this, and I started to work with these words and what they meant to me. And in Mrs. Evans' whatever it was sermon, I believe, she said they build one on the other. You know, they come in a order, a progression, and you'll probably see that as we talk about it. One builds on the other. Okay, so the first is faith. And what does faith mean to any of you?
Believing in something good, no matter what seems to be going on, just kind of knowing that there is something good and just trusting and holding on and working till you realize what that is in certain circumstances.
Thank you.
I believe the addiction. Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes. There was some more background noise. Please mute yourself if you're talking to anyone or if there's any kind of noise. Mute and unmute yourself, please. Go ahead, Betty.
I looked it up, and it said faith is an affectionate, practical confidence in the testimony of God. And what really caught me was the affectionate part of that definition. I hadn't actually thought of it as being an affectionate confidence, and that really helped a lot.
Yeah, read that again. That was beautiful.
Is an affectionate, practical confidence in the testimony of God.
Why is that word affectionate important?
It involves love.
Yes. Yes.
You have to love in order to have faith.
Yes.
And also, faith has to be of the heart as well as of the head. Faith is not an intellectual exercise.
Yeah, I'm not sure it ever is of the head. I think it is more of a heart. The heart. You can't reason yourself into faith. That might help you jumpstart you, perhaps, into having faith. If you think about all the things that God has done in the past, it can be a jumpstart, but mainly it is of the heart. What were you going to say, Florence?
Oh, no, I was agreeing with that I feel it more. It's a heart thing. It's from the love. I mean, if you love something, you really trust it too. So I feel that it goes really from the heart. It's from the heart that you have that confidence that, yes, I can hold on to this or this will not fail.
Yes. It's not just words. It's really, like you said, coming from the heart. It's doing something and just taking it and running with it, not just talking it.
Yeah, it's the feeling of it. Do any of you feel you don't have faith?
No.
Well, that was...
Not now.
Not now.
That's wonderful.
Oh, that's a good, strong answer. Yeah. So... If anyone who's listening feels that they don't have faith, how would you tell someone how to get faith?
I think you know, practicing the simple things. For example, I had learned, you know, the Lord is my shepherd as a child, but I don't think I really had faith in it because I didn't really use it as... you know, I didn't love it enough, and I certainly didn't love God enough to trust that simple thing, the Lord is my shepherd, that this is true. Now, after so much teaching and learning from Christian Science, you put it in practice, the little things, when something is coming up that I'm anxious about, I would say, the Lord is my shepherd, and I gave it more... I think it became more convincing to me the more I grew to love God. That's about how it, and I guess what you said earlier about Mrs. Evans saying it built on other, you know, after seeing it, really proving it in one case, then something else comes up and I can trust it and use this and build on.
That's right. You take one, if you feel you don't have faith, just take one little simple sentence, like Florence said, use it, make it yours, digest it, work with it, and then see the fruits of this. And then you get a step in faith, and then you build on it. You know, if it worked once, it will work again. And as I said, sometimes to jumpstart it, look at the faith that many others have had and what has resulted in that faith, all the prophets and... You know, the testimonies, things you hear today and now. If it's available for someone else, it is definitely available to you. You just have to use it. And then, when you get the fruit of it, then what do you have to do?
Practice it.
Yes.
Oh, gratitude.
Yes.
Thank God.
Yes, thank you. Yes. Express your gratitude, or it will slip away. And I tragically have seen this happen to people. Tragically. So much good has come. And they give lip service to being grateful, but they are really not. Because actions speak louder than words. And if you are grateful, you will express it. You will share it with others. You will testify to it. And then you will go up again on the scale of being.
You know, I was thinking about faith, and I wanted to make a distinction about faith in God and also faith in a person. And I tried to see faith in a person as not really good faith, but I couldn't because I think it's also a good thing. We have faith in God, and, you know, you're putting yourself of the way, giving God complete control of the situation, even when it looks like a big mountain that you can't climb, but knowing that this is God's thing, He's going to take care of it His own way. And you watch Him do it, and sometimes it seems amazing when we accomplish things that we thought we would never be able to do because we have faith in God. And the other one, having faith in a person that I didn't actually see very well until recently when I was looking at these patients, which I think is very important too, because, you know, you have faith in a person, you are seeing that person right, knowing that that person is equipped by God to do the right thing. I will go back to my first point. You are not seeing that person, you're also seeing God, meaning that it's God that is doing it, not that person. And that person can do anything.
And Mrs. Eddy once said, follow me insofar as I follow Christ. You can have faith in a person only insofar as they follow Christ.
Yeah. And also, she has said, trust in truth and have no other trust. Because if faith in a person can fail you or disappoint you, so it has to be God. And even faith, you know, someone who's done tremendous works even for a long time, you know, if they go off in some way, then it can be extremely disappointing. So that's why your faith has to be in God. But to your point, yes, it is good if you see God working in someone and you know it's God. And to that extent, I guess you could have faith in that person, in their godliness. So
I think it's all too common in this world that it's so easy to have faith in someone based on their so-called authority or whatever. Mm-hmm. But remember what Betty said earlier. It was an affectionate faith in the testimony of God. So if you just talk to God more, open your heart more to Him, you're going to see more of God's testimony and more faith in Him.
Yes.
And what do you say about someone who has had a tragic experience? They've lost a loved one or something, and it has shaken, or they've lost faith in God because of that. How could God allow something like that to happen is something I've heard from people who say they don't have faith. What do you say about that?
Well, they're blaming God, aren't they? I think that...
And what's the answer?
Well, they couldn't possibly love him. You know?
Well, it's true. If you ever get into that situation, and it is exactly what the devil would like, for you to blame God. And in old theology, you know, does God give us and God take us away? And, it's, you know, it is all, seems to be all God's fault. But science tells us something much, much different.
And I think the answer was already given earlier, and that is, well, look at the good you've had, and thank God for it.
And also, anytime anything like that happens, it is never God that does it. It is a lack of God. It is a darkness where the light wasn't. And we judge no man in instances like that, but we just shine more love on that situation and compassion. And I'm sure we've all been in situations like that where maybe we've wanted to blame God, or why do we have these problems, or why was I put into this world to be miserable? And the truth is, the absolute truth is, you were not. And the absolute truth is, too, that you never lost anyone, because there is no death. You go back to the absolute, and you stay with that. It's only because we see through a glass darkly. You're thinking you're having all these problems. This is Mrs. Eddy's answer to it, as I've read it. Who says that it happened in the first place? You're in a bad dream. You're in the Adam dream. So get to the absolute. Hang on to that absolute, even though all your senses are telling you otherwise. You hang on to the truth. Perfect God, perfect man, perfect universe. That's what you do. And you stay with it, and you will find that loss is gain, and that you will grow and learn and become all the better for whatever experience you've had. If you stay with it and you stay the course and you don't give up and you don't blame God, Not the truth, never was the truth. Get back to your absolute statement.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, thanks. It reminds me of what Jesus said to Thomas when Jesus first appeared. to Thomas after his resurrection. Because remember, Thomas doubted that he was alive, that Jesus was alive. And he said, until I see him, I won't believe it. And Jesus said, Thomas, you believe because you see me. Blessed are those who believe but haven't seen me. And that, to me, is faith. It's trust in the truth of what God has revealed, regardless of whether you understand it or not, regardless of whether you see it clearly, but you still have the faith in the truth.
Yes. And you know, for the unbelieving, they can see so many healings. They can come to a Wednesday night here and listen to all these testimonies and still doubt or still question or still, you know, think, oh, well, that would have just happened or whatever else. So have the eyes to see and have the eyes to be grateful. To be grateful for others, yes, absolutely. And then to know that when the healing's available to someone else, it is available to you. And work on your own faith. As an old-time preacher said, if you don't have faith, well, you better get yourself some. So get yourself some. And everyone can, because you're all God's child, and he loves you. So have that affection back for him, and you will find wonderful things happening.
Just one more thing, or one more definition that I found that I thought was helpful also of faith is the surrender of one's will to God's will.
And thank you.
First, I didn't see how that applied to faith, but it totally applies. In order to have faith, you have to be willing to surrender your own will to God's will.
Absolutely true. Yeah. Take faith to do that, you know, especially if you're a control freak.
which means it requires humility to have faith.
Most definitely.
Hello?
Yes? Someone want to speak? Hello?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
I just wanted to share that in those cases that they are blaming God, I always just say, well, God has nothing to do with that. And it usually just shakes the person so well. It just really has worked well. And then from there, sometimes they ask something else or whatever. And then I say, you know, this is man did it. God has nothing to do with that, and it really goes really straight, and it's been really great, so I'm grateful for that.
Good, thank you. Yeah, God does have nothing to do with that. This is all old theology, and it's the old theology that would try our faith to think that God does create evil and is responsible for tragedies. No, not so. Not so in science. Not so, period. It's a false belief. And you will either suffer from those false beliefs or you will come out of them through your understanding of this truth. So, Linda, have we well covered faith?
Yes, I think so. The next one was virtue.
There was a definition in the 1828 dictionary that says virtue is nothing but voluntary obedience to truth.
I like that one, too.
That was great. Who was that who answered?
Mm-hmm.
Elizabeth.
Elizabeth, thank you. That's a great definition.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And I liked that one also, Elizabeth, and I thought about it, and I thought, well, it's voluntary. It's willing, it's cheerful obedience
yes.
to the truth, not because you're told to, or not because you're afraid not to.
Sure. Yeah, one of the definitions I found was strength, because I guess it does take strength to do this. Can't be weak, you've got to be strong to do it. And the practice of moral duties from sincere love to God, for God and his laws. Here again, the love for God. You can't obey or do anything if you don't feel some affection for God. So if you don't feel any affection for God, you got to get some. Just like you got to get your faith. You got to get it.
We have to get a lot of stuff.
We do. And, you know, I thought that Florence's testimony, yes, God loves me. And she went for years feeling, and I know I did too, feeling maybe God didn't love me. But you work on these things. This is what's so exciting about these Bible passages. You work on them. You make them yours, and you will see fruit. Your life won't be barren anymore. They will be fruitful. Anybody else with virtue?
Well, it also means to me integrity and honesty.
Yes, thank you.
Also in the Webster's 1828, it also said conforming life and conversation to moral law. And I thought that was so important because it's practical living and speaking, and people can really see that and feel that in others and respect it.
Thank you.
One of the interesting things I thought was the Roman definition was strength. And where does strength come from?
God.
Certainly not a physical thing. Where does the power come from? It has to start with faith in the truth.
Yeah, and your strength in God and in your obedience to him. Okay, anyone else? Okay, let's go to...
The next word is knowledge.
Knowledge, thank you. Anybody want to venture?
Hopefully there's wisdom in this knowledge.
Yes, thank you, because just mere human knowledge is not good. Thank you, Jean.
Okay.
Wisdom is of God.
Well, knowledge is more listening than knowing in the sense that we think of it.
Good.
Yeah, so what kind of knowledge is it referring to?
Understanding.
Part yes. of Webster's said illumination of mind, and I was thinking of the Christ light in the world.
Thank you. Yes.
So basically understanding God in yourself and God in his creation.
Well, it's also, yeah, it's also, there's a very practical definition too, which came from Webster's, and that is it's a clear and certain perception of that which exists, of what the facts really are, of what the truth really is. And as we go through our daily lives, do we see things the way they really are? Or do we have biases, limitations?
Yeah, this knowledge is divine. It is from God. And, yeah, one of the definitions I found was a clear and certain perception, as Gary said, of that which exists or is of the truth and is of the fact. So real knowledge is discernment between the truth and the fiction. And that comes from God. It's intelligence from God. Any more on that one? Do you understand it and the difference?
Underneath that definition you just read, Mary Beth, it says God has a perfect knowledge of all his works. And then next to that it says human knowledge is very limited.
Good. Human knowledge is what, the tree of knowledge of good and evil?
Right, which leads to what?
Death.
I heard someone recently say or write that he had heard rumors about such and such. And this is a person who claims to practice Christian Science, who's listening to rumors. But how often are we influenced by, quote, rumors, or gossip, or hearsay?
That's why you always take it back to the standard, and make sure that this is from God. Perfect God, perfect man, perfect universe. Otherwise, you quickly go into the Adam dream and things fall apart. So, in the Amplified version, I found it helpful in this because it uses the word develop, and it says, for the few things we've just talked about, for this reason, adding your diligence to the divine promises, employ every effort in exercising your faith to develop virtue, which is excellence, Christian energy, and in exercising virtue, develop knowledge or intelligence. So this is the buildup of the words. If you use that word develop, as you develop your faith, then you become, then you develop your virtue, your strength, and then you develop your intelligence with God. And then we'll go to the next. We've done enough on knowledge.
Temperance is the next one.
Yes. Anyone on temperance?
Well, Mrs. Eddy pairs it with meekness. She said temperance and meekness are the jewels of love set in wisdom.
Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you. Anybody else?
And what is temperance?
Patience and calmness.
Thank you. Yes.
Moderation.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a steadiness, isn't it? A calm. And moderation in all things. And I found it useful to think about what things does this apply to? I mean, you know, eating and drinking, you don't stuff yourself and that sort of thing. But it applies to a lot of other things, too. Like, what else might it apply to?
Well, in my case, maybe reading too much and not digesting it and learning to practice it in simple parts.
Okay.
Thank you. That's a good example.
Yeah, I would think from a personal point of view, when I lack temperance, I like the opportunity to listen to God or to hear God. Because it's a calm state of mind that we all must be to be able to hear God.
Thank you.
Another temperance is careful about the company you keep and where you are, you know, your environment, where you're taken on. You can't meddle around with things that are not godly and think you can escape unscathed by it. So you got to protect your mentality and nurture the purity to the extent that.
Go ahead.
It seems to be the opposite of willfulness.
That's good.
Right. Mm-hmm. Or an extreme.
An extreme. You get your bit in the teeth or you just fly off the handle or you get absolutely lackadaisical or I like what Gary said about steadiness. Steady as you go. You know, otherwise you will. You'll end up falling off the wagon, so to speak, if you're not steady. Go ahead, Jeremy.
A few weeks ago you read from Collectania where Mary Baker Eddy talks about the steps of animal magnetism. And the first one, it mentioned frenzy. And the thinking about that.
Yeah.
Seems to be the opposite of that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Get you off guard.
Yeah. That's good, and perhaps this is why it applies so much, the first steps of animal magnetism and frenzy, and another is to get you just soporific and some stupor, extremes.
I've noticed that how well children take to a stable home environment, and this is what the steadiness that I think we're talking about. I mean, they just love it. They drink it in, and they flourish in that environment.
So do adults, yeah.
Interesting. Very well.
Yeah.
Well, one other thing that I was thinking of, it ties to talking too much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm. Yeah, that's a big one and a good one.
Yeah, I mean, there is a tendency for most of us. I know I have to watch myself sometimes to talk too much. Most people are uncomfortable in periods of silence. And most people have a tendency to talk too much.
Those are all good examples. Anyone else want to offer?
Yeah, I read something that Mrs. Sadie wrote. I think I found out from, I can't remember whose book it was. But she said that every morning that she prayed and asked God to tell her when to speak and also when to keep calm.
Keep quiet, yeah.
Keep
yes.
quiet,
yes.
Right.
Thank you.
For me, I think it's important because I never actually thought about that until I read that. So I started thinking about it. I mean, this is, it goes back to knowledge, you know, knowing when to, if you have that, it's a gift, knowing when to speak out, to keep calm. Speaking out meaning speaking out against error.
Yes, yes, when to rebuke an error, mm-hmm. when to speak in love, and when to be quiet. You know, sometimes in an effort to want to help someone, you can, and I've done it, over talk. So, and then they get indigestion because you've given them too much. So you need to just know when, just give them what they need. And only God knows that. And as you're listening to God, you will know it too.
Thanks.
I find that the best way for me, this temperance thing, is to have it in thought always to have God's will be done in everything. I think that's what works for me.
That's wonderful. That's certainly the solution to it all.
As a newcomer years ago, I got in trouble because I wasn't temperate. I think it's important newcomer grasp it soon, because there's a poem by Max Dunaway called Neophyte, and that calmed me because I was just so excited when I saw and heard and saw a thing happening here that you just wanted to, you know, I understand this. Let me do this. But it was human. But I needed to stop and wait and listen to God before acting. And so I was unstable, basically. And so it's very important to learn that lesson soon. And then I realized, just stop, listen, wait, and then do. It's much life.
Thank you, Craig. We'll have to look that poem up, Neophyte. Okay, anybody else, or we'll go on to the next?
Well, someone mentioned steadiness, and what came to my mind is discipline. And I think it was Bruce that said children love discipline, basically, and adults do too. And I had an experience with that many years ago when I was transferred to a new school under another principal, and he was totally different in the operation of the school than the one I had left. But I had worked with him before, so I knew that. But the 30 teachers that came with me were crazed because he was so kind of loosey-goosey, and the other principal we had was extremely disciplined, and they did not know how to handle it. They had a really hard time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a time when the discipline, there's a time when people need structure, very often. And then there's others who maybe graduate past all that and don't feel they need anything. They're totally self-disciplined. But there again, this is God's will and knowing what's needful in each situation.
And someone who has a strong faith in God, who lives a virtuous life, who is getting things clearly, intelligently, will have the self-discipline needed to carry on.
Thank you. There we go. One building on the other. And the next is?
Patience.
Time frame.
Yeah.
Different.
Oh no, it's very different. Patience is very different.
Well, one of the definitions I found was Christian submission to the divine will. Maybe, and that's what Florence was saying about temperance. Your submission to the divine will. And also a definition we've often used here is active expectancy of good.
Yeah.
It's not just sitting around doing nothing, patience. You're doing plenty if you're being patient. Active expectancy of good. And if you're doing that, believe me, because while you're being patient, Era will tell you a lot of stuff. So that's why you've got to be active in knowing the truth so you don't listen to all the discouraging arguments as you are waiting patiently.
No, that's just the way it works. Air would like to get you to dance its dance. But if you simply say no, I'm confident in knowing that good is going to be the outcome, no matter what. You may not know exactly what form it'll take, but you're confident that it will come. You won't play to end Air's hand and get you running around, whatever. You'll have that patience, which is guided by God.
If I can have a minute to follow up on what Mary just said, being active, you're just not sitting down thinking God is doing it, but being active in your thinking. I saw a documentary on TV about a woman who was kidnapped by her husband and tortured her to the point of death, and he thought that she's already dead, but she was playing there. And he put her away and locked her out to die. But her new husband and her mom and her two children, even though police told them, I mean, she's dead based on the environment where they found her blood, police were trying to recover her dead body. But her family refused to accept that as the truth. And they were expecting her to come back to them alive. And they, staying in this state of mind, they refused to accept what the police were telling them. And luckily to them, somebody found this woman at that state of that situation she was. I was able to call the police, and they came and take her to the hospital where she was brought through God's grace, and she came back to life. And
Great. They
were happy, and they said, we refuse to accept that as the truth.
Refuse to accept a negative verdict. Refuse to accept a negative verdict. And if you have to be patient in that refusal, but you're active in knowing that truth, and wonderful things can happen. God is in control. That's a good example. And, you know, Carol, she gave one last week about someone in a coma, and that it was actually someone from her office who kept going in to see him and telling jokes and just refused to give up on that man. And he woke up, and they did attribute it to the power of God. So active expectancy of good, not just sitting idly, and as Benjamin just said, thinking God will do it all. No, you do your part. Praise God. Sing your hymns. Know the truth. And accept only his verdict. Your expectation is from the Lord. In Psalms. Anyone else?
I had persevere without murmuring.
Good. Yes, because if you do murmur and you whine and complain, that doesn't help it, does it? We say,
no.
My southern cousins would say having a pity party. So, doesn't help. I mean, if it would help, and I would tell myself this too, Mary, if it helps, go ahead, have your pity party. But it doesn't help. It doesn't help. Okay. We're building
the next
up.
One is, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, no.
The next one's godliness.
Let's see, who hasn't spoken? How about Suzanne? I always like to call on Suzanne.
She always has something good to say.
She does.
No pressure at all. I'm careful. I'm looking at the 1828 dictionary. The careful observance of the laws of God, proceeding from love and reverence for the divine character and command, Christian obedience.
There's that word again, obedience.
Obedience, yeah.
And, you know, you should know, you should be able to tell a man or a woman of God by their actions, by the way they are. It should be obvious, and you can ask yourself, are you a man or woman of God? Do you live up to the principles and obey him the best you can? So it's a wonderful thing to be, and when you find a person like that, it's a great treasure. You know, to go back to that Mrs. Eddy, I think it's in, well, it's in Prose Work somewhere, the man of integrity. I love that. Find him always the same. A trusty friend, a citizen, all the good things. A good businessman in all his ways. He goes by a fixed principle, she says, a fixed principle. If anyone can look that up quickly, they could read it, but a man of integrity. So that's the godliness.
Can I add one thing?
Sure.
That's something I need to learn. But godliness starting to seem like it's a, also to act as God directs, take responsibility. I mean, like there's often. Like, what would God do in this situation? Not just to be a kind and good person.
That's great.
Yeah, I'm thinking, I don't do it enough.
That's great.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too, because to be a godly, to be to have this character of godliness doesn't mean you're going to be sitting on a bed of roses. Trials will come. Because trials will come, to you have to prove it. And it's going to come. If you are not able to prove it, that you're not living up to that expectation that people see often in you. And like Gary said before, somebody who has a lot of good stuff, and we all see godliness in him, but when the temptation came for him to prove it, he couldn't be able to do it. You know. So it will come.
Trials always come. They will always be there. The question is, how do you deal with them?
Yeah.
Do you deal with them with patient expectancy of good? Do you maintain your obedience to the truth? Or do you lose it? You fight back and get down in the mud and lose your connection with God.
Yeah, lose your temperance and your all these things. And what, you know, I think it was Bicknell Young said, going back to what Craig said, Bicknell Young said, you know, ask yourself, what would God do in this situation? I mean, that's a tall order, but at least it'll put you back on the right track if you're getting a little muddled up with something.
Or alternatively, what does God want me to do?
Yeah.
In this situation.
Did we do enough with godliness?
I have the man of integrity if you want me to read it.
Yes, please do.
Okay. The man of integrity is one who makes it his constant rule to follow the road of duty, according as truth and the voice of his conscience point it out to him. He is not guided merely by affections, which may sometime give the color of virtue, to a loose and unstable character. The upright man is guided by a fixed principle which destines him to do nothing but what is honorable and to abhor what is base or unworthy. Hence we find him ever the same, at all times the trusty friend, the affectionate relative, the conscientious man of business, the pious worker, the public-spirited citizen. He assumes no borrowed appearance. He seeks no mask to cover him, for he acts no studied part. But he is indeed what he appears to be, full of truth, candor, and humanity. In all his pursuits, he knows no path but the fair, open and direct one, and would much rather fail of success than attain it by reproachable means. Oh, there's a little more. He never shows us a smiling countenance while he meditates evil against us in his heart. We shall never find one part of his character at variance with another.
That is just, I just think that's so beautiful, and it perhaps it sums up all of this. Where is that?
I did it electronically. I know it's page 147, but I'm not sure in which of the books. It looks like it's miscellaneous writings to me.
It is miscellaneous writings.
Yes.
Miscellaneous writings, thank you. 147.
147 starts line 14.
Something to all think about, work for, to attain that state. So it's a wonderful description of a godly person. And all that we've talked about today, it's not just to talk about it. This is for you to take home and to work with, to make it yours, so you become all these things, so you are fruitful and not barren. And it is a promise. And what is a promise? Is it going to work?
Promise is a law.
Yeah. This is a biblical promise from God.
It is a covenant.
This is the word of God. It says, if you do these things, you will not be unfruitful or barren. So maybe we can briefly touch on the last two. I'd also, Susanna, we were going to talk about your blog today, but we're running out of time. So maybe next week if you're still here. So anyway.
Okay. The next one is brotherly kindness.
Well, I'll give the definition. I think we all, that temper or goodwill which delights in contributing to the happiness of others, which is exercised cheerfully in gratifying their wishes, supplying their wants, and alleviating their distresses. Now, that's what you all are doing here. Brotherly kindness. You are giving. You are giving. And it's wonderful. And that's why you're here. Not to take, but to give. And I mean, some of you come in the beginning to take, yes, but after you've been here even for a short time, you come to give, and you all do freely. There's something that I found that is so wonderful. It's in Collectania on page 27 of the addenda. It's Notes from the Class of 1889 by Mrs. Eddy. I'll read a little bit of it to you. It's probably too long to read the whole thing, but this to me is the spirit of this class. It should be, and excuse me, the round table. And you are all, once you name the name of Christian Science, you are all the various levels of a practitioner and of a teacher. If you share this with others, what is that? It's being in the practice. It's teaching. So this was Mrs. Eddy's spirit in this class. I give you nothing new. There is nothing new under the sun. It is only the application of an eternal truth in a new and a practical way. I cannot answer all your questions, for I cannot answer all my own. There is an eternity for us to learn in. If we patiently wait, if you cannot understand my terms, wait and see what they mean. Do not misconstrue them from your old interpretation. Come empty of all preconscious opinions, creeds, prejudices, doctrines, or isms to receive the truth, and with charity of open mind receive the truth I give you. Then test the reality of your own by it. Except one is empty, he cannot be filled. I give you but the key to knowledge, You can only unlock by living it in your own life. Otherwise, it will be only theory. There is no salvation in theory. I will never say a word I have not proven. If I theorize, I will tell you so. I can only show you the way I have gone. I am only an ambassador, a voice to lead you into your own kingdom, where God, the truth alone, illumines everyone according to his own degree. The system of truth I am teaching when reduced is simply the bringing the Christ to you, or the way, the truth, and the life to your whole being. And then this. I wish, as an act of justice, that you hold sacredly in your memory that I assume no good or power of myself, that to God alone I ascribe all love, wisdom, and power, the all in all, the all good, that I am absolutely nothing, a mere instrument in God's hands to be used as he will. This is the only position for any of one of us to be in. Mrs. Eddy.
Thank you. Amen.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.